This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil, the boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm your host, Walter Rigobon. As usual, with me in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz.
Good morning, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's getting a little chilly out there.
Frost in good old Nobleton this morning.
Frost in Nobleton. Anyways, the NHL season starts this week. The Toronto Maple Leafs are creating some excitement in the city. They got off to a little bit of a slow start in preseason, which preseason is normally meaningless in any event. But they got on a little roll. I think they won 4 or 5 in a row, and they look pretty good doing it, Naz. So NHL starts this week, Leafs starts this week, and at 9:15 or shortly thereafter, we'll be talking to Michael Tracco, senior hockey writer for Post Media Network, about the NHL in the upcoming season. Middle of the hour, John Steinbrenner, one of golf's great writers, is going to be calling us directly from Liberty National, the President's Cup. That particular competition seems to was pretty well over before it started. So we won't steal John Steinbrenner's thunder. We'll have a brief chat about the President's Cup and this overwhelming performance by the American team. Naz, topic we were chatting about it just before the show. Why don't we start off with that one? We try to avoid political discussions on the show.
But few
listeners have been after me all week to express an opinion on whether the Naz and Wally Sports Hour has any opinions when it comes to non-sports items and. Of course, that takes us to a discussion of the NFL, and I don't really want to get too heavy into the politics of it because, of course, we're talking about the controversy about the national anthem, the protest, Colin Kaepernick, and all of that. And the one thing I realize that opinions are so polarized in American society these days, and for that matter, in Canadian society, perhaps not as bad as America, but we've got our own issues to deal with here, both race issues and indigenous people issues. So we, you know, it's not that we don't have concerns north of the border either. We do, but we came in this morning, Naz, and I asked you who are the Bills playing today?
The Bills are playing the Falcons.
Yeah, but I had to think about it because nobody's talking about football.
Yeah.
Right? Or if we talk about NFL football, it's just about the big question today is not necessarily who's playing who or who's playing well or whatever, but who's going to kneel today. And of course, the president in his, I was going to use the term infinite wisdom. Let me take that term back. For whatever reason, Of course, wants to keep this discussion going, and he tweeted once again yesterday that he expects all NFL players to stand for the anthem today and not to protest. And we've had this discussion briefly on the show, Naz, and I'm going to acknowledge Colin Kaepernick's right to peaceful protest. But I guess the question is, when are we going to start talking about football again and football games? And what can the owners and the players do to sort of get a meeting of the minds so that we can satisfy the players' concerns? And perhaps I'd like to see an end to the kneeling and to the protest during the games, at the same time acknowledging that there are some significant, overwhelming social issues that need to be continued to be discussed, and progress needs to be made. But I just want to watch some football.
Yeah, you were asking me how do we end this? I don't think they can end it. I really can't. I don't see how unless they don't play the national anthem. That's the only way I can see it, that this comes to an end, because it's just going to continue on, going on and on and on, right?
Yeah, and these are issues that hit home on both sides of the debate. And I can, you know, quite frankly, given my background, I can argue either side of this mm-hmm. particular debate. You know, one side perhaps has a higher moral ground, or quite frankly, they do, because they've been subject to racial injustice and racial inequality essentially for the last since the United States was founded. Not that progress hasn't been made. Progress has been made over the course of 200 years, but there's still progress that has to be made in those issues. Muhammad Ali put the issues forward in the 1968 Olympics. You remember those protests? John Carlos and Tommy Smith. Yeah. Protest and putting your opinions forward is what America is all about. It's called freedom of speech. In that freedom of speech exercised at these particular points in time during a national anthem and during a flag waving, whether we like it or not, that tends to turn up or put other people's backs up who take it as a sign of disrespect. And they've got feelings on the issue as well. And I guess my question is, Colin Kaepernick and the NFL players, their legal rights, they're putting forward valuable issues. But at the same time, you've got 80,000 paying customers coming to a game, half of whom probably aren't that thrilled about somebody kneeling during their national anthem. And who's right and who's wrong? There's probably a little bit of both on both sides.
Oh, it's definitely but they're two different issues. One is the flag and the racist issues are two different issues, I think, and they're getting mixed up with each other, right?
I think you hit the nail on the head, Naz.
Yeah, they're two separate issues altogether.
And somehow, if somehow you could separate – I mean, I'd love to – whether that should happen – I guess the debate is whether that should happen at that particular moment in time.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see the owners and the players get together and somehow they communicate and they have a dialogue where the owners can satisfy the players' concerns about the message that they're trying to put out. And perhaps the players can do it in a different way that satisfies their need to put their issues before the American public, and perhaps in a way that, I don't want to use the word insult, but there's a lot of paying customers, a lot of people coming to these games that just want to watch a football game. Mm-hmm. They might be supportive of the players' protests. They are supportive of calls for racial justice and racial equality, and everybody wants to put an end to police brutality, and there's nobody who's not in favor of that. Although when I suggest that, I'm a vocal supporter of police. Obviously, there's going to be a few bad apples.
Bad apples everywhere. Right?
You want to get out of them. You want to get them out. But I think the players, the racialized players, are suggesting it's not just a few bad apples. It's systemic, and that needs to be addressed. And of course, civilized society should have these discussions. And perhaps the players and the owners can come to a discussion, a different way of doing it that satisfies the players' concerns and perhaps lessens the spectacle that we are seeing every Sunday. And perhaps we can start talking about who's going to beat who on Sunday afternoon rather than how many teams are going to be taking a knee today. I want to start talking football again, Naz, and hopefully reasonable people can come to some sort of reasonable accommodation on these very, very serious issues.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I agree with you.
Anyways, it's time for our break, and we're going to talk some hockey. We're going to talk some NHL. We're going to talk some Toronto Maple Leafs, and we'll be right back with Michael Tracos, the senior hockey writer for Post Media News.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville brought back the large five-topping pizza special for just $13.99 for a limited time. I'm whispering because the last time Pizzaville brought back this special, there was pandemonium in the streets, pushing, shoving, biting. So order now and order often, and hopefully you won't have any bite marks when this is over. Call Pizzaville for the large five-topping pizza special at £3636 from your cell phone. Shh.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740. If you're listening in downtown Toronto on 96.7 FM, live streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour senior hockey writer for Post Media, Michael Tracos. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, guys. How are you doing this lovely Sunday morning?
We're doing great. Thank you very much. We want to talk some hockey. We don't want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins going to the White House. We've tired with that topic now. Let's talk some hockey. NHL is going to start this week. The Toronto Maple Leafs are starting. There's a buzz in the city. Michael, how optimistic should we be in Toronto?
Yeah. Well, I think across Canada, there's a reason to be optimistic aside of living out really west in Vancouver, but in Toronto, I think there's a really good chance that A, this team is in the playoffs, but B, could end up with home ice advantage. And I think it's going to be tough in the Atlantic Division to knock off a team like Tampa Bay. I see them probably winning the division, but after that, Toronto should be in a mix to finish second with possibly maybe Montreal also in that mix. And we'll see who else is in there, but there's probably a cluster of three teams that could easily get that second spot in the Atlantic, and no reason why Toronto, with the scoring power that they have, and just based on what we've seen out of those young guys, and they're only going to get better. We keep hearing that, and it's true. So no reason to think that Toronto can't be at the top there.
The Toronto defense seems to be the issue with their team, and they've added they're probably going to add Cali Rosen and Borgman, looks like on the roster, two kids from Sweden. Is it a problem with the Leafs, their D?
Is it a problem
with the Leafs, Michael? Their D is the problem on the team?
I don't know if it's a problem anymore. I think there's maybe unknowns. We don't know what Cal Rosen and Borgman are going to bring in their first year in North America. Are they going to have seasons similar to Nikita Zaitsev? If so, then it's definitely not a problem. But there's probably going to be some growing pains. And I still question Ron Hainsey. I know he was able to play probably a number one role unexpectedly for the Penguins in the playoffs, but still talking about a guy who's up there in age, not the fastest skater. And I wonder if his usage is too much, if Leafs will burn him out too early, and see how he can handle that. So I think that's one question mark in my mind, whether it's Carrick and Rosen or Carrick and Borgman or what that combination looks like. I think there's a lot of potential for that third pair. We know what we're going to get out of Gardner and Zaitsev, but that third pair, they can eat up a lot of minutes. I think that'll make Mike Babcock's job a lot easier and maybe take some pressure off Ron Hainsey having to log maybe 25-plus minutes a night.
Does the Toronto whipping boy Marinchin get released this week?
Yeah, it looks that way. When he's had opportunities in preseason, there's been too many gaffes. And just with the competition on the back end, I would put him behind not only Rosen and Borgman, but I'd also put him behind Travis Dermott in terms of how he's looked. And to be honest, knowing what you got out of Roman Polak, I know we haven't seen a ton of him in the preseason because of the injury, but I would even be putting him behind a veteran like Polak. So, yeah, it looks like Marinson's going to get released. It's a question of does he get claimed or not, or if he's the guy that we still haven't seen the last of here.
I'd personally love to see Polak back. I thought he brought something to the team last year, but I want to take in a different direction, Michael, slightly different direction. A lot was made that on the Dominic Moore signing, he was going to be our fourth-line center. He's going to kill some penalties, take some face-offs. But this Altonen kid may bump him from this spot. How's the fourth line peg looking? Is it Altonen or is it Dominic Moore?
It's a good question. I don't think even Mike Babcock maybe knows for sure right now. And it's interesting because a year ago it was a similar situation with Brooks Light, where you figure, okay, the Leafs are going to have a young team, and all the interviews going in were Brooks Light is going to play that father figure role to guys like Matthews and whoever, and the guy that had played with Michael Nylander, so now he's going to play with his kid and William, and things changed. I've got to find a place for him. So I wonder if a similar thing is happening with Dominic Moore, where maybe Lou and Mike Babcock weren't quite on the same page when he was signed as a free agent, or if it's just a case of, you know, you don't know what you got out of Altonen. You don't know what that ceiling looks like, what his potential is going to be as a fourth-line center. Maybe this is a guy that provides you with way more offense and gives Babcock an opportunity to slot him in different spots in the lineup, but and maybe it's a nice problem to have when you got Battle back there in the fourth line. But then you also have, if need be, you can throw a Dominic Moore in there because you know what you got with him. Or with Altonen, you're almost kind of taking a flyer and kind of trying to swing for the fences with this guy.
There's two guys, Kapanen and Altonen. They both can be sent down to the minors, right? Both those players, they have options to go down to the minors. The Leafs can send them down and not lose anybody. Is that correct, Mike?
Definitely with Kapanen. With Altonen, I think it's a different case. You probably can send them down to on the minors, but I wonder if this is a guy at his age level. If he would, I don't know what his thought process is like. If he's one of those guys that would say, listen, if you're going to send me down to the minors, I might as well just go back try my hand in Europe, or what the case is there. But there's definitely options. They're not sold on any of these guys, and even Dominic Moore. With the money he's being made, you can send him down to the minors and eat that contract, no problem. I don't think that's necessarily a problem if you lose one of these guys to waivers, or with Kapanen, you're not going to do that. It's not a Josh Leivel situation, but
poor Josh Leivel, eh? Poor Josh.
Yeah, I just can't recall, like, in the last 5 years where the Leafs had this real problem where look at some of the guys in the minors, and the depth that they have at the forward spot in particular is astounding. And even with defense, I know there's not maybe the top-end guys that a Calgary or Nashville has, but when you're looking at the depth, like, they have a lot of guys that are worst-case scenario or bottom-pairing NHLers, And like we said, with just the ceiling and the unknown levels with Rosen and Borgman and Dermott coming up, these guys are potential second pairing defensemen. And like I said, just a lot of depth, a lot of competition. And I think Leafs have a lot to be happy about after seeing what we've seen in preseason.
We're talking to Michael Tracco, senior hockey writer for Post Media Network. Michael, one of the concerns, obviously, when you've got young talent coming off of great seasons, is the quotation marks sophomore jinx. Always worry about that. But watching the kids in the preseason, it doesn't seem that they've lost a step at all. In fact, it seems like Austin Matthews has taken his game even to a higher level. Your reaction to how Nylander, Marner, and Matthews have looked in the preseason?
Well, I think there's no concern that there's going to be a sophomore jinx. And it looks like Mike Babcock did a smart thing in the sense that there were specific games where he told everyone in the morning skate, okay, this is, or even the day before, this is going to be an NHL roster that we're going to ice here. This is going to be a full complement of the team. And by doing that, I think you put a lot of pressure on the kids and you say, listen, there's going to be a lot of eyes on you, not just maybe from the fans and the media, but across the league. I think a lot of people were watching that. And I had the pleasure of talking with Paul Maurice in Winnipeg this week on the phone, and I asked him just about sophomore jinxes, and he said no. And he brought up that whole Leafs. I think there was the game that Austin Matthews had a hat trick, and he said, you know what? A lot of people are watching what Toronto can do and already has done. And I talked to Bruce Boudreau about the same thing, and he said that when you've got the kids in Toronto, these aren't guys that came into the league last year and unexpectedly had good rookie seasons. Everyone expected that Matthews, based on the World Cup and World Championships, and that Marner and Nylander were going to do something special. So great players doing something great. There's no reason why it can't be replicated. It can't or built upon, and I think that's the case here. I think worst-case scenario, Austin Matthews ends up with a similar season that he did last year, and I would be, if I was a betting man, I would definitely bet that he improves on it and does what McDavid does and really kind of takes that next step forward.
Michael, Marlowe's, of course, the big-name signing. Where does he fit in, and how are you? How do you see Babcock putting the top two lines? Who's going to be on the top two lines in what places?
Yeah, I think with Martin, we're just talking again about that depth that they have. He comes here, and it's not slam dunk that he's going to play with Matthews, and he hasn't even seen a minute with him. So I think it's a great scenario where you've got this balance in your lineup where you can have Nazem Kadri with Marlowe and Komarov or whoever else ends up on that wing, whether it's maybe a Connor Brown or someone like that. But really, your top three lines, each one of them can do damage. And I wonder if their usage is going to be very similar when all is said and done in terms of the even strength minutes, if he just kind of rolls three lines and without a care in terms of who's starting where. Saw what Nazem Kadri was able to do last year. I think looking forward, there's no reason to why you shouldn't expect 25 goals out of Kadri, 25 out of Marlowe, and somewhere around 10 to 15 out of Komarov. And that's a lot of production out of one line. When you got Bozak with Van Riemsdyk, who I think is really in a happy spot. The one thing I kind of took away from training camp this past couple of weeks was that every time I went in that room, JVR looked like a guy that could not be happier with the situation right now. I think he looks around that lineup and is just beaming in the sense that he doesn't have to be the go-to guy, that there's a ton of great young talent. It seems like a really cohesive room. And I think he's just loving the fact that he gets to play with a guy like Mitch Marner. Him and Bozak obviously have that familiarity. And like I said, they're not leaned on to be the number one line or even the number two line. And yet they're probably going to produce like a number one or number two line. And we know what Matthews and Nylander can do. And it's just a matter of can Zach Hyman maybe produce more than he did last year, because it's going to be in a lot of opportunities. And I think you need him to be sort of what Pat Maroon was for Edmonton and chip in with more goals than he did. And maybe he's a guy that takes kind of, I don't think, unexpected step forward, but maybe with the contract behind him, this is a guy that can really kind of do some damage.
Let's talk about the Leaf rivals, the rival, the Montreal Canadiens, and how they look. They, the beginning, they went 0-6. They won their last couple of games. Where, what are they going to do this year?
Yeah, I don't put too much stock on the preseason, but there's a weird one. There's a lot of moving parts there. They lose Markov, they lose Emelin, but I think they upgraded on defense with getting Carl Alzner, who's maybe a younger version of Markov in the sense of what he's going to bring for them. And they get David Schlemko, I think, is an upgrade over Emelin. So I think their defense is a little better. They've already got Carey Price in there. I don't care what your defense looks like. He's going to make it look really good as long as he's healthy. The one question mark for me is just the offense. They didn't score a lot of goals in the preseason, and goal scoring was a bit of a problem for them last year. You get Jonathan Drouin, but now you're asking him to go from his wing to his center position. That's going to be a tough transition. I know he looked pretty good there and pretty comfortable there in the preseason, but that's one to kind of keep an eye on to see if he lasts at the center spot or if they move Galchenyuk back there or if someone else can be an answer. If Drouin can work up the middle, I think it's going to be Montreal and Toronto battling out for that second spot, maybe third spot in the Atlantic. And this is a playoff team. I think there's no doubt when you've got Carey Price that this is a playoff team. It's just a matter of do the other pieces around him work.
We've been talking to Michael Tracos, senior hockey writer for Post Media. Michael, we're excited about the season. I know that you're a journalist and you've got to be objective. So, but we're excited about the Leafs' prospects this year, and I'm sure the fans in the Toronto area and all Leaf fans across the NHL community are really excited about this year. So, let's stay in touch and. I know you can't say this, but we'll say this. Go, Leafs, go.
Well, it should be a fun season. Like I said, there's a lot of excitement, not just in Toronto, but across Canada. And when's the last time you actually went in with, not hope, but legitimate high expectations that this is going to be a good one? So, yeah, you should be happy.
Yeah, we are, and we're really looking forward to the season. Thanks so much for your time, Michael.
All right, thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That, of course, was Michael Tracos talking about the Leafs. Before we go to break, Naz,
I disagree.
Response.
Montreal, I don't think Montreal will make the playoffs. I really don't.
You really don't like the Habs, do you?
No, not at all.
Anyways, we'll be right back after the break with John Steinbrenner, and we'll be talking about the President's Cup.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realised that people may not know how many different kinds of Ponzos Pizzaville makes. You can go Italian if you like a sausage. You can go Hawaiian if you like ham and pineapple. And you can go Canadian if you like bacon, beer, and hockey. We can build a ponzo that speaks your language, no matter where you are from. Call Pizzaville at 736-3636 or visit pizzaville.ca.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive. We'll likely save you money too. But the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The Naz and Wally Sports Hour is a paid program. Opinions expressed on the show are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys.
The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour John Steinbreder. John is, of course, one of golf's great writers, contributor to Masters.com, a senior writer for Global Golf Post, and has received numerous awards for his golf writing. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. We understand that you're covering the President's Cup, and you're actually down at Liberty Village, National, down in Jersey.
I was there all day yesterday. I'm not covering it per se. I'm doing some work, but leaving that to my colleagues, John Hopkins and Ron Green at Global Golf Post, to give you the blow-by-blow. But I was down there yesterday, and it was a beautiful day. It's in a gorgeous setting. Took a water ferry to and from the course across the Hudson River from Manhattan, and lots of good visuals of the Freedom Tower and the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island. But the story there, of course, is just the internationals are getting stomped, and it was amazing to see the bloodletting continue yesterday, as it has been since the matches started on Thursday.
Certainly, the internationals are getting it handed to them, which I think after they do the postmortems on this, John, and I don't know whether you even thought about this, but this hasn't been much of a competition since it started back in 19. To be quite frank. Since 1994, the internationals have only won it once, and they've gotten smoked by the Americans most of the time. And this is probably the worst thumping they're ever going to take, and that's probably a combination of a lot of different things. One, number one, is that the Americans have one of the best teams in recent memory that they've ever put together. But is there something inherently wrong with this competition, the way that it's set up, that they're really going to have, the organizers are really going to have a look at to see what changes they can possibly make to make it more competitive?
You know, it's a great point, and it's so hard as you look at this, because on paper, I mean, my goodness, you got Jason Day, you got Louis, you got Hideki Matsuyama, you've got Adam Scott, you've got some very, very good players, and you would think that there would be much greater competition in all of this, and there isn't, and that's a great shame. And I don't know. I just think it's a series of bad luck. I guess I would. I don't want to be an apologist or anything, but I'd pass on some of it as bad luck, as Jason Day not having a great year, of Hideki being very cold right now, of Adam Scott not doing much. I mean, Adam didn't play yesterday afternoon; he was on the bench. You know, so some of the real stalwarts there that you would think could put up a good fight, just, you know, it's a time of year for them and a time of their season. They're just not playing that well. And so a lot of it, I think, is bad luck. And the Americans seem to be, you know, playing super. I don't know that the international team versus, let's say, the European Ryder Cup team is, you know, person to person that even that inferior. I think there's some, you know, pretty similarly strong players on both sides. But for some reason, as there were times with the Ryder Cup, of course, the internationals just can't seem to prevail. Like you said, they've won only one time since the founding of this competition. They have that one time in South Africa when Jack and Gary were the respective captains. I don't know what they do, and the timing really for this couldn't be worse when they're, you know, they're reconfiguring the season a little bit going forward. They're trying to get it so there's not a lot going on after Labor Day, certainly in the States at the PGA Tour, with once the football season starts, both in the pros and the college, it's hard to get people to pay attention to golf. And I don't know what they do with this. I don't see them getting rid of it, but it's just I just think it's been a series of bad luck and misfortune here that the U.S. is beating up on the international team so much, and I really hope it changes, because as we know at the Ryder Cup, it's a much better competition when there is competition. And when you've got that great rivalry and that ferocity of trying to beat each other and the closeness of these matches. I mean, it was sort of to me, there was a weird sense out on the ground yesterday that it just didn't have the buzz, the feel, the excitement of other tournaments I go to or other matches I go to. It was fun. It was beautiful.
think people appreciate great golf, but there wasn't that sense that there was something dramatic going on from a competition standpoint at all.
The sense I've always got from this competition, except for the days perhaps when Norman was involved, the Americans yesterday, they look like a team. Mm-hmm. There have been issues on the American teams in the past, but these guys look like they're actually enjoying playing with each other. They feed off of each other. They feed off their emotions. They've got leadership. They've got Mickelson. Tiger's there. And their play is just has been exceptional. The internationals over the year, like, what do you rally around? I mean, you've got golfers from, you know, from Korea, from Japan, from Canada, South Africa, Australia. And there doesn't seem to be any leader on that team. It's not like the days when you had perhaps Price or Norman or some of those guys. It's just like it's like a team playing a collection of individuals. And
well, you know, you're right. You're right. You're so right about that. You think back to the Europeans, and they had such enormous inferiority complexes when they hadn't won in years. And then you got Seve involved, and you open it up to the continent beyond the Great Britain and Ireland team members. And they had chips on their shoulders, and they were a team. You're exactly right. Now, the Europeans became much more and are still much more of a team when they get together and do this in ways that, as you say, the internationals just can't seem to overcome the great geographic disparity in their, in their makeup.
John, has the depth in the U.S. golf improved a lot? Because I've noticed that it has, and they're getting better and better and better, and a lot more U.S. golfers out there doing very well. What do you think of that?
What I'm seeing is unbelievable. I mean, I was still looking at. It was funny going through the newspapers this morning, and on Sundays I actually read a newspaper as opposed to just going online. And I was looking at the leaderboards of a couple of tournaments, the British Masters. I was looking at the leaderboards of this Web.com event, where guys like Jonathan Bird, who's not a young man, is shooting six rounds of 64 and 65 consecutively. You look at the play of course, Spieth and Thomas. You look at the play of Patrick Reed coming on, and he always seems to excel in these team competitions. I mean, Brooks Koepka coming up right now, and Dustin Johnson, of course, who at one point yesterday hit a drive that went 374 yards. I mean, I don't know that from a depth standpoint, I don't know if American golf has been in better shape as far as that's concerned. They've got such a large group of golfers who, on any given day, who was it 2 days ago? Arnold Palmer's grandson, Sam Sanders, shot 59 in that same Web.com event. It's extraordinary to me. And this is on the Web.com tour. And, how many good golfers are out there who are capable of going low and going super low on any given day or time? And they play with such enormous confidence. And they're hitting the ball 100 miles. Their approach shots are excellent. Their play around the greens is just hard to beat. And they make putts, and they seem to be absolutely fearless. So I would argue that I don't know that it's ever been deeper, certainly in my lifetime, when you look at the talent across the U.S. scene.
Well, I don't think there's any question, John, that in the youth of them, I mean, this particular team, the way they're playing, and I'm not so sure it's a fair comparison to the Jack Arnold Ryder Cup teams, some of those incredible teams, many of whom are in the Hall of Fame, but in the modern era. And in the incredible other thing about this team is the youth on it. You got, Thomas and Spieth and Johnson. and you got a bunch of other guys on the way up. American golf is probably, from top to bottom, has probably never been this strong. I mean, they could obliterate competition for the next 10 years if these guys keep playing the way they're playing. Certainly, it's fun to watch. The talent, like you say, is incredible. Just on a slightly different note, John, you and I talk about golf courses all the time. Liberty National. Which is the course they're hosting the President's Cup at this week. What do you think of it as a golf course?
I've played it one time. I wasn't overly impressed with it from a design standpoint. The setting is It's very hard to beat the visuals to see the Statue of Liberty from many places on the golf course, the skyline of Manhattan. And so there's things about that that make it really, really appealing. And it's pretty cool to arrive at any golf course via boat, whether it's a water taxi from Wall Street area or one of these ferries that I rode on down from the Pier 79. But, I don't think it's a great golf course. I mean, the pros have complained about it. I think they've had to come in there and tweak it and fiddle with it a few times since Bob Kupp and Tom Kite designed it, and it has come under criticism. But I think for something like this, to be able to have a major competition in the New York area, to have the Manhattan skyline visible the whole time, I think that overcomes whatever deficiencies there are as far as a design standpoint are concerned. But, I don't think the pros love it, and I don't think it's something that they're dying to have become part of the FedEx Cup Rota again or anything like that anytime soon. But it serves its purpose beautifully for something like this because it's a great match play course. The setting is beautiful, and I think it's wonderful as a kind of a New York area guy born and raised. I love when these major competitions are in the New York area because people just seem to really enjoy it, and it gives it a nice big city appeal to it.
Anyways, we've been talking to John Steinbrenner. John, once again, thanks. Probably not much to look forward to in this competition this afternoon, unfortunately, other than, tuning in and watching some masterful golf from some of the American players. Really something incredible.
Yeah, people have fun watching it. People who go out there, again, it's really easy to get out by the ferry. You don't have to deal with the New York area traffic. So I think you'll have good crowds out there. But, yeah, individually to turn it on and to watch it, I think it's going to be hard to get all fired up about it. But you've got, the best players in the world competing against each other. And I think it's always fun. I think you feel the same way. We've talked about this before, too. To see match, to see match play, which you don't get to see a lot, to see, other players in the gallery once they've finished up to go out to watch the compatriots play. There's a great shot of the New York Times this morning of Mickelson and Amy and their two daughters in the gallery yesterday watching, sitting on the ground, their arms up in the air. I don't know if they're doing the wave or whatever. But, I mean, those sorts of elements make it really fun to me. And I think so since it's a different thing, it's not just a stroke play event. There'll be the individual matches with these really good players, and they'll all be playing. I think, you'll see some great stuff. You'll see some great face-offs between different people. And I think it'll be a lot of fun, but it'll lack that drama. It'll lack that sense of intensity for the simple fact. All the U.S. has to do is win one more match, and it's over.
Yeah, President's Cup. My favorite President's Cup memory, just want to share this with John, is Royal Montreal 2007. It was Sunday. The internationals were out of it, but Mike Weir went toe-to-toe with Tiger Woods in the last matchup, and Weir won that match and made a fantastic Sunday for all passionate golf fans in Canada. That's my favorite.
That's one of mine, too. I remember that very well. I remember watching that, and I remember thinking that was I love Royal Montreal. It's such a great, classic, historic club. And, Mike's a wonderful guy, and Tiger was at his, the peak of his game then. And so it was really, really fun to see that go on. I agree with you. That was one of the great wins of all time and something that was really, really enjoyable.
Anyways, John, we'll let you go. And on last note on the President's Cup, watch for the President's Cup to be in Canada in 2023, I believe. It's coming back to Canada. You heard it here on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour.
That's great news. I look forward to that. And thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure, John. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
John Steinbrenner. We'll go to break, and we'll be right back after the break. Oh, we've already had our second break, Naz. Sorry about that. Got excited talking about Tiger Woods and Mike Weir. My producer's looking at me saying, what pills have you been popping this morning? We've already had our breaks. Okay, so what we'll do, we'll take some calls. Be an opportunity to take some calls. We haven't taken some calls in a while, so I'll read out the phone numbers. Area code 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. If you want to call in, we'd love to take your call. We'll give out those numbers again. 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. Announcement. I want to announce TFC won their game last night. They accomplished something that a Toronto sports franchise, a major North American franchise team, finished since 1963. Apparently, they took the entire league title. The MLS title, they won it last night by beating the New York Red Bulls, I believe, 4-2. So congratulations to TFC. Hopefully we will see them in the MLS Cup final December 9th in Toronto. Hopefully but they did win the regular season title last night, and congrats to TFC. The Argos are on a bit of a roll as well, Naz. So
they're going to the Grey Cup. And nobody really cares.
They seem to have turned their season around. And we've asked for calls at 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. I noticed the call lines are buzzing. So, Justin, if you can put the first call through, please. Good morning. Welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Who are we talking with? Good morning.
Oh, Tom from Brampton.
Tom from Brampton, what's on your mind this morning, sir?
I'd like to see the Jays go out with a win today.
Oh, I think we all would. Naz, I'm going to ask you to comment on that one, Naz.
Well, I predicted them to finish last in their division, and they may do it with a loss today. But things aren't as bad as they seem right now. They'll be a lot better next year for sure.
I agree with that. Yeah. Look at Detroit, the money they spent on those players and where they ended up.
Yeah.
And second, Johnny Football. Nice to see Hamilton negotiating with the guy. I want to see him here next year.
Well, you may be a minority on that one, Tom, and thank you very much for your call. We'll let you go.
One more thing. I hate the Leafs.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Right. Anyways, I'm not even going to ask you to comment on that. We'll comment on that after, but we've got Kevin from Buffalo on the line. So, Kevin, what's on your mind this morning, sir?
Well, good morning, gentlemen, and quite a Sunday with the ending of baseball season and this week opening of hockey, and quite a different evening. Last evening, the Toronto Marlies played their final preseason game. They played the Rochester Americans here in Buffalo. And just sort of a slight plug on the Marlies and the American Hockey League, and with the opening with the Maple Leafs this week. And I noticed I did see the second half of the game, Matt Hackett got in goal for the Marlies. And for the Amerks, the Sabres just sent down Almick, and because of the trade, Chad Johnson came with the Sabres. And just in closing, a great time of the season with the ending of baseball. And good luck with the Maple Leafs, and Montreal is here Thursday. Exciting time, and boy, the American Hockey League, long time tradition, and you know there's a lot of great players that you get to see on the sidelines. Last evening, the Sabres, they sent down Justin Bailey and Batiste, and they were actually sitting in the corner. Fans could get autographs, and great time of the year. Good luck with the baseball and the playoffs. The Yankee series should be very exciting. And you know, gentlemen, real quickly in that, in one game, you never know. Even though home field, one game can be always a challenge. But have a very nice week, and always a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks so much, Kevin. It's always a pleasure hearing from you. Thanks so much. Naz, any comments to Kevin?
Yeah, the Marley team was playing last night against Detroit. Most of those guys that played in that game against Rochester, I'm sure, are not going to be on the team. A lot of those guys that played last night are going to be on the Marlies.
Yeah, I think that goes back to the point that Michael Tracos made, that aside from the fact that the Leafs, if everything goes according to plan, they're going to have a good team this year. The depth in this organization, it's probably better than it's been since I can remember. You're sending some really good hockey players down to the American Hockey League. So not only is there going to be a buzz around the ACC this year, there's probably going to be a buzz around the Rico Coliseum because it certainly looks like the Toronto Marlies are going to have a good team. And, you know, they've got some NHL caliber players. And, you know, that's great for the Leafs because, you know, any team that goes through a season, they're going to run into injuries. And the teams that are able to survive that are the teams that have depth in the organization. And for the first time in a long time, it looks like the Toronto Maple Leafs have some really quality personnel that can – I mean, every time Josh Levo comes up, I mean, he impresses me. He's got a skill set, can't seem to find his particular niche in the Babcock scheme of things. But, you know, when he comes up, you don't necessarily lose that much of a step. I mean, I'm not talking about losing Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner or Lee Nylander at that. I mean, you can't replace superstars. But, you know, you bring a Josh Levo up or a Kapanen. I mean,
Kapanen is not going to make the team. That's amazing. He's so talented, and he's not going to make the team.
Well, that may be a function, as you mentioned, Naz. It may be more if you've got to send somebody down, it's contract and money, yeah. And exactly. Whether you use up a year and all that, all the myriad of ins and outs that come with the salary cap era.
Can I go through the roster where I think it's going to be, and let's see how close I come to this. We're going to have Rosen and Borgman. Gardner, Hainsey, Riley, Saitsev, and Carrick as the seven defensemen. Pollock may get in there eventually, but those seven will start with the Leafs. Bozak will be with Marner and Van Riemsdyk. Matthews with Nylander and Hyman. Kadri with Komarov and Marlow. And Moore is going to be on the team. Moore, Brown, and Martin. I think Fear is going to get released, Eric Fear. I just think that's the way Lou Lamoriello is. And I think Levo and Altonen will be the other two guys. So that's what their team's going to be.
Pretty good lineup. The critical parts of the lineup, and you know, the reality is injuries. And then it's not easy making the playoffs.
No,
it's not easy. And you've got a couple of teams coming that didn't make it last year.
Every year, there's three teams that don't make the playoffs that made it the year before.
Yeah. And so some of the teams from the year before that didn't make it, that had some injury trouble, you know, they're better and healthier than they were last year. So it's going to be a scramble. Anyways, I'm excited, Naz. Last word before we sign off.
Let's go Buffalo Bills.
Okay. It's been another great week for the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.